You'd open your Bibles to Luke chapter 1. I've thought about it a couple times between yesterday and today. But the first place that I ever actually... Hey, Wyatt. Wyatt, what's up? This is the first place that I ever... And Kylie, right? Yeah, okay. Sorry. I'm embarrassing you now. This is the first place that I had ever led songs at. I remember on the Wednesday nights, whenever we'd do the last Sunday or whatever it is, the singing's on Wednesday nights, and you guys entrusted to me some opportunities to do something that I had never done before. And as I've been driving around the town with Asher, and every time I go on a certain road that we used to go on for other reasons, I'm just flooded with all kinds of memories. And one of the drumbeat kind of things that I've kept remembering on this trip is just how much the Lord used you guys to help me grow. The conversations that we had with one another that meant so much to me, the shared wisdom that you guys wanted to give to me, all of that has helped form who I am today. And I'm thankful to God for the time that I was able to spend with all of you. And I'm thankful, very thankful for this time that I can be with you guys on this gospel meeting. I want to preach a sermon on this lesson that I'm doing tonight was something that was assigned to me a couple months ago at another church where I was doing their VBS, and so I was speaking to the adults. But my lessons were supposed to correspond with what the kids were talking about so that when all the kids came out and we had different songs and the adults heard a lesson on the same kind of thing that the kids were hearing on. I had never preached a sermon on Mary before, on Jesus' mother. But I don't know about you, but for me, there's a lot of passages in the Scripture or characters in the Scripture that because of how badly misused they are by well-meaning religious people, the only way that I've ever thought about certain people like Mary is what she's not and what the Bible doesn't say about her to combat what people have misspoken about that passage or that person. Mary's maybe one of the prime examples of at least a character in the Bible. If you asked me what I thought about Mary, the only thing I would tell you is what she's not. And so it was, I think, helpful for me to be assigned this topic so that I would proactively think about what are some positive lessons that we can learn from this person. Now, I want to share with you some of the things that I learned in that discovery process that I gave to that church in Kentucky. Let's go ahead and read Luke chapter 1, verses 26 to 38. Rather than doing a comprehensive kind of overview of the life of Mary, I just want to look at the first time that we read about her chronologically in the New Testament. Let's go ahead and read Luke chapter 1, verses 26 to 38. In the sixth month, the angel Gabriel was sent from God to a city of Galilee named Nazareth, to a virgin betrothed to a man whose name was Joseph of the house of David, and the virgin's name was Mary. And he came to her and said, "Greetings, O favored one, the Lord is with you." But she was greatly troubled at the saying and tried to discern what sort of greeting this might be. And the angel said to her, "Do not be afraid, Mary, for you have found favor with God. And behold, you will conceive in your womb and bear a son, and you shall call his name Jesus. And he will be great and will be called the Son of the Most High. And the Lord God will give to him the throne of his father David. And he will reign over the house of Jacob forever, and of his kingdom there will be no end." And Mary said to the angel, "How will this be, since I'm a virgin?" And the angel answered her, "The Holy Spirit will come upon you, and the power of the Most High will overshadow you. Therefore, the child to be born will be called Holy, the Son of God. And behold, your relative in her old age has also conceived a son, and this is the sixth month with her who is called barren. For nothing will be impossible with God." And Mary said, "Behold, I am the servant of the Lord. Let it be to me according to your word." And the angel departed from her. I want to begin, as we start looking at this text, by saying a couple things about the historical backdrop of what we're seeing here. You notice that in verse 26, it begins by saying the sixth month, in the sixth month. Well, in the sixth month of what? If you look at the end of the text in verse 37, it brings up the sixth month again, and this is where we learn that Elizabeth was in her sixth month of pregnancy. Well, who's Elizabeth? Zechariah and Elizabeth, the Gospel of Luke begins with this older, barren couple that trusted in the Lord. And this couple has miraculously conceived. And then the next story is about Mary here being given a more miraculous kind of conception. And so when verse 26 says in the sixth month, it's linking the previous story of Zechariah and Elizabeth with what's happening with Mary and Joseph. And in fact, here's one way that you can look at some of the interconnections between these two couples. So Elizabeth and Zechariah, Gabriel visits them with good news. Mary and Joseph, Gabriel visits them with good news. Good job, Gabriel. In verse 5, we learn that Elizabeth and Zechariah are from the priestly lineage. There's nothing said about Mary's lineage here. Now, she's going to be associated with Joseph, who is in the lineage of David. We'll say something about that in just a moment. Elizabeth and Zechariah are in the big, important city of Jerusalem, whereas Mary and Joseph are in the unimportant city of Nazareth. This is a barren older couple that is married. The second couple is betrothed. They're not yet married, but she would be of the age of being able to give birth. Zechariah is going to doubt that this all can happen to them in their old age, and Mary's going to trust in God. Now, we're going to come back to some of those connections as we go through this lesson, but just know that at the beginning of this text, when it says in the sixth month, this is inviting us to compare and contrast these two stories. What very different couples, but God is working in both of their lives. Now, there's something else to say about the historical setting other than just these two couples. If you were to go back and look at verse 5 of Luke chapter 1, the Gospel of Luke opens up by saying, in the days of Herod, king of Judea. So you look at these two sets of couples and you're looking at their lives, but let's broaden it out and think about what Luke begins by saying. In the days of Herod. These are words that are very easy, I think, for us to pass over and not really fully understand even some of the significance of that statement. In the days of Herod. What does that mean? This was a very wicked man, a man that wasn't even fully Jewish, but he was king of the Jews. This title was given to him by the Romans, who had set him up in that position. This guy was married 10 times, and he had an estimated 43 children. Some people had said that it would be safer to be his pig, which he shouldn't even have, than to be his child or his spouse or any family member. Because he even had one of his wives killed. He had some of his children executed for fear that they were going to try to take his throne from him. Can you imagine being an Israelite living in the days of Herod? Can you imagine wicked rulers over an... We don't really need to imagine that very much. But can you imagine having a guy that's supposed to be a religious king over a group of people, not at all concerned with what it is that the Lord has asked him to do? Well, in this text, though, it's like if there's dark clouds over the nation, there's rays of sunlight shooting through the dark clouds. In this time period, it's not just that they had a wicked king. The Jews also had anticipation that there would be somebody that would come and make everything right again. There's going to supposed to be a man in the line of David who is supposed to come and be the perfect ruler. 2 Samuel chapter 7, verses 12 and 13, saying to David, "When your days are fulfilled and you lie down with your fathers, I will raise up your offspring after you, who shall come from your body, and I will establish his kingdom. He shall build a house for my name, and I will establish the throne of his kingdom forever." God's promising to David way long ago that there's going to come somebody in his lineage that will have the throne, and he's going to have it forever. And what we're seeing in this text with Mary is that these promises to David are starting to come to fruition in the context of a wicked king ruling over the nation. You notice that Mary is betrothed to a man named Joseph. And we know that Joseph is in the lineage of David. In Luke chapter 3, verse 23, it says, Jesus, when he began his ministry, was about 30 years of age, being the son, as was supposed, of Joseph. Meaning that if Joseph is like the father that sort of adopts Jesus, that Jesus is considered to be part of the line of Judah. You can even trace Mary's lineage and find that she's connected to Judah anyways. But you see these promises being fulfilled here. In fact, look at verse 32, that when this angel appears to Mary, the angel says that this son will be given the throne of his father David. All the hopes of the Jews are starting to be shouldered upon this baby that's going to be born from this woman. And it's this news that Mary receives, by the way, that also shows us that we're going to have to ultimately answer to Jesus. He's going to have the throne. He starts out as the baby, but he ends up growing up to become the judge. And one day he's going to come back in the true triumphal entry. We talk about the triumphal entry being when Jesus enters Jerusalem, not on a horse because kings weren't supposed to multiply them, but on a donkey. His triumphal entry? Okay, maybe. You know, the true triumphal entry is going to be when he returns one day in judgment. And all of this is starting in this moment, planned from very long ago. Maybe something else to notice about this text, though, is how many times it's emphasized that Mary was a virgin. It's emphasized in verse 27, two times in verse 34. Why does Jesus need to be born of a virgin? And some people have said, well, to avoid the sinful nature being transferred to Jesus, he had to be born from a virgin. There's nothing like that in this text. But the reason why the angel says that this is going to happen in verse 35, therefore the child to be born will be called holy, the Son of God. What is it that's so significant about the virgin birth? The virgin birth proves that Jesus is the Son of God, that he's originated from God himself. It didn't come from any man. He is the Son of God, the one that's divine and man at the same time. That's the reason given in the text. Now, I want you to imagine this scene and what happens here. In this scene, we have this angel Gabriel that is leaving heaven, the heavenly realm. And there's times in the Bible where we got this heavenly picture, like in the book of Job, where the angelic beings are before God. I don't know if Gabriel was like before some heavenly council, and then he was sent out to go, and he leaves, and he ends up going to a city of Galilee named Nazareth. Have you ever noticed that in verse 26, for Theophilus' sake, I think, it has to be noted where this place is. So Theophilus, you guy that's a Roman ruler probably, this all happened in a city of Galilee. You know where Galilee is, and it's one of those little places around there, and that the name of the place was Nazareth. This place that's not ever mentioned in the Old Testament, this place that's never mentioned by any of the Jewish rabbinic writings or Josephus, this chronologically is the first time that we read about Nazareth in all the Bible. And so, in that heavenly council, I wonder, were the angels saying, all right, well, we got to keep going to Jerusalem, just like they did with that other couple, like Jerusalem's the really important city. What about the capital, Rome? That's a pretty important city. No. How about Gabriel gets sent to this town that nobody's concerned with? It's not the kind of place that a king would come from. The heavenly realm is concerned with a place that nobody on earth would have been concerned with. And maybe you'd think that by accident, that there's a really important person in Nazareth, and that's why the angel is being sent there. And this person that he's being sent to is not really that important either by earthly standards. He goes to this woman named Mary who's betrothed or engaged to this man named Joseph. And can you imagine, did he come in to the world, the angel, did he come into the world as in a human form and he passed through some of the cities? Was he flying? I don't know what all that looks like, but he finds the place that he's supposed to go and he goes to this woman who was probably a teenager at this time, maybe between the ages of 14 or 16 or something like that. And this woman, if this encounter never happened to her, she would be another woman in antiquity that we know nothing about today because she would have lived and had some kids and she would have died and nobody would have written a thing about her. But because God had sent this angel to her, we all remember her today. And so Gabriel knocks on the door or walks in the door or just enters into the house without even going through the door. I don't know what that looked like. And he goes up to Mary and he says, "Greetings, favored one, the Lord is with you." Now, if an angel suddenly showed up to you like that, how are you feeling? I'm frightened. In fact, the angel says, "Don't be afraid." We'll say more about that in just a second. But Mary here is greatly troubled, or she's shaken. Can you imagine her just kind of paralyzed like this? And as she's doing that, she's trying to figure out, she's trying to discern what kind of greeting might this be. And that makes you ask the question, well, what's the variety of greetings that angels have? I don't know. I don't know what the variety is. But this angel's here, and is this like a dream, or is this literally something? Is this good news? Is this bad news? And then the angel, the first thing he says after he introduces himself to all, or talks to her initially, he says, "Don't be afraid." Now, if somebody comes up to you and says, "Hey, I don't want you to be afraid, but," what do you start feeling? Fear. Okay, don't be afraid, but you're gonna conceive and bear a son, and his name is going to be Jesus. And you're like, okay. What? And by the way, he's going to be great and he's going to be called the Son of the Most High God. What was Mary thinking when she, me? In this town that nobody's concerned with? Why is this happening to me? And she's got this question that makes a lot of sense. How will this happen since I'm a virgin? She knows that people have to be married and all that to be able to even have kids. And she asks a very good question. "I'm not even married yet. How's this going to happen?" Okay, well, Mary, here's the answer to that. The Spirit's going to overshadow you. Oh, okay. All right, I got it. Never heard about that happening before, but okay. You can imagine maybe even still some questions on, well, how's that going to happen? I like how the angel explains to her, okay, there's this woman named Elizabeth. You probably know her pretty well. She is in her sixth month of pregnancy right now, and she was called barren. In other words, there's already miraculous events happening right now. And I wonder if this is the first time that Mary's even heard that this is the case for Elizabeth. Because it says in Luke chapter 1, verse 24, "After these days, his wife Elizabeth conceived, and for 5 months she kept herself hidden." So Elizabeth gets pregnant. She's secluding in her house. Is this the first time that Mary ever hears that Elizabeth is even pregnant? I think it might be. So she gets this news. She finds this out. And she says, "I'm a servant of the Lord." And one of the statements in the Bible that you need to memorize and recite to yourself is what she says in verse 38. "Let it be to me according to your word." I'm going to come back and say some things about that in just a moment. But that's the scene. What should we take away from a scene like this? I think there's a few things that we can learn. I think we can learn, first of all, something about the mission that Mary has. I don't know about you, but I've always struggled to know how to relate to Mary. The things that happened to her are unprecedented. Nothing like this ever happens again. How are we as Christians supposed to relate to somebody like this? And I think there's some really concrete ways that our lives should actually reflect the life of Mary. Think about the mission that she has. Her mission, first of all, is to have Jesus formed within her. Which is interesting because two times in this text, in verse 32 and in verse 35, God is called Most High. What's happening in this text is the Most High is becoming the Most Low. He's coming into a person that history would have forgotten unless this happened here. The Most High becoming the Most Low. There's a song, a hymn that I don't think I've ever sung here or anywhere else. And it's written by a man named William Billings. It's called The Shepherd's Carol. And part of the hymn says this: "Seek not in courts or palaces, nor royal curtains draw, but search the stable, see your God extended on the straw." When God became man, He didn't come guns blazing in a giant castle and telling everybody to bow down to Him. He came in the form of a baby. The Most High becoming the Most Low. And the only reason that that would be possible, though, is it proves God's greatness. Well, how would it do that? I want you to look at something that C.S. Lewis says. "Everywhere the great enters the little, its power to do so is almost the test of its greatness. In the Christian story, God comes down from the heights of absolute being, into time and space, down into humanity." Let me explain what I mean by using this quote here. The ability for something to be proven to be great is if the great can enter the lesser. Okay, here's one way to picture that. I don't ever want to have a dog, ever. You guys know that about me. But let's say that I did get a dog. I could play with my dog and act doggish around my dog, you know, like act like a dog. But could that dog ever talk philosophy with me? No, because I am greater than the dog. I don't mean to boast about that, but it is true. I could go down and descend to the dog and enter doggishness, but the dog could never enter humanness, if that makes sense. So for God to come down into a person is a way of even proving His greatness. And this is what He's doing with Mary. Mary's mission is to have the Most High formed within her. Do you have a similar mission, by the way? Galatians chapter 4, verse 19. "My little children, for whom I am again in anguish of childbirth, until Christ is formed in you." Paul brings this up in the book of Galatians because there's false teachers that are misleading the people, and because they're being misled, they don't have a full devotion to the Lord, and they're having other things formed within them other than Christ. Do you know what your mission is? Your mission is to have Christ formed. Why is it that we come together and we hear sermons that slap us in the face and say, you got to do this better and you got to do that better? The aim of all of this is to have Christ formed within you. The Most High wants to come into you and take up residence in your heart and in your life. Now, that's part of what her mission is. And we can relate in that way. But another mission, and this is related to this, is to bring Jesus into the world. How, in the Old Testament, where did God choose to represent Himself? In the temple. In the New Covenant, where does God choose to represent Himself? Through His people. So that when the world looks at you, they're supposed to see an image or a picture of Jesus. God is using us to represent Himself, to bring Him into the world. Why does it matter that you get over your anger? Why does it matter that you get over your envy? Why does it matter that you grow in holiness? So that the world can have Jesus manifested to it. Okay, so do you see that we've got some similarities to Mary in that way? I think we know that those are things that we already ought to be doing. And maybe you hadn't thought about that with Mary before in that particular way. But let me drive this home one step next. However you'd say that, whatever. Who are the kinds of people that Jesus uses to have Himself formed in them and to have Himself brought into the world? What kind of person does God use? He uses virgins. And He only uses virgins, and He's always used virgins, and that's all He'll ever use is virgins. Do you want me to explain what I mean by that? I'm speaking metaphorically when I make this point, but look at 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verses 2 and 3, where Paul says, "For I feel a divine jealousy for you, since I betrothed you to one husband, to present you as a pure virgin to Christ. But I'm afraid that as the serpent deceived Eve by his cunning, your thoughts will be led astray from a sincere and pure devotion to Christ." The picture of the Bible is this. You've been betrothed to Christ. The consummation hasn't happened yet. You're betrothed, And until the consummation happens when he returns one day, your mission, your purpose is to remain a virgin, spiritually speaking. Another picture of this is in Revelation chapter 14, verse 4, where it says, "It is these who have not defiled themselves with women, for they are virgins," referring to the 144,000. This is metaphorical speech to say that those who are with God are ones who have remained pure. They've not committed idolatry or spiritual adulteries, another way that you could think about that. How does the Bible end? It ends with the consummation. It ends with the marriage supper of the Lamb. We are right now in the betrothal stage. Think about in your life, if anything is leading you astray, are you, spiritually speaking, a virgin? Or have other things crept into your heart? Have you been deceived like Eve was by the cunning of Satan, and your thoughts and your desires are being led astray by all kinds of different things, by your status or by your wealth or by your education or by what people think about you or a myriad of other things, sports, whatever it could be? Are you being drawn away and no longer being a virgin, purely devoted to the Lord? And if that's the case in your life, then you are not having Jesus formed within you. It's probably something else, like all your political opinions or all your things that you want people to know about your status or your wealth. And you're not bringing Jesus into the world. What you're bringing into the world are all these other things that you've learned that you think is the real good news. Do you see how that works? You can reverse engineer this and ask yourself, what are you bringing into the world? And if it's not Christ, it's because you're not a spiritual virgin anymore. All right, so you see that we've got the same mission as Mary. If you were Mary and you received all of this news that you were going to bear a child in this manner, you might have the same question that she has about all of this. Her question in verse 34, how will this be since I am a virgin? Which is ironic that she asked this question, because a lot of people will say, well, back then, you know, we know that the virgin birth didn't really happen because back then people were more superstitious and they believed in these kinds of things. But we know that this could never happen and it never happened, that sort of thing. But if you were to ask Mary, hey, Mary, why did you believe in the virgin birth? And she'd say, well, because it happened to me. Here she is even wondering before this ever even happens, how is this going to happen? By the way, Luke is a doctor. And Dr. Luke, as he's writing this, he knows that this thing doesn't happen the way that it normally happens for Mary. But it's interesting that in this same chapter, Mary asked this question, but then in verse 18, Zechariah, when they're told that they're going to have a miraculous birth, he says this, "How shall I know this? For I am an old man and my wife is advanced in years." Do you remember what happens to Zechariah when he asks a very similar question? He's muted until John the Baptist is born. It's like he's punished. Why is it the case that when Mary asks this question, she's given a graceful response, but then when Zechariah asks almost the same question, mute, don't talk anymore until John's born? Is it possible that you can ask the same question, but ask it from a different kind of heart? Think again about your mission. Having Christ formed within you and you representing Christ to the world. And how hard it is to believe that God would use us to do something like that. Well, I've talked with a lot of people who have walked away from the faith or have never been part of Christianity, and they've got all kinds of questions like, how could a loving God allow evil and suffering? How could a God be loving and then command the Canaanites to be wiped out in the book of Joshua? I've seen a bunch of Christians not really serving God seriously, and so bad Christians happen to me, and so that's why I'm struggling. By the way, if you've ever known anybody or you're struggling with questions like that, one of the questions that I like to ask somebody who has a question like that is, what have you been doing to try to get answers to that question? You're not the first person in 2,000 years to ask these questions. There's been a lot of literature, a lot of sermons on these things. If you're saying that you're struggling, but you're not wrestling to try to figure out an answer, quit using the word struggling. What you're doing is you're using it as an excuse to not have to serve God. That's what you're doing. But don't say that it's a struggle if you're not wrestling and struggling. Because when somebody asks questions like that, and they're not even trying to figure out answers, you're asking it more like Zechariah. When Zechariah asks this question, he's, how is this? This is not going to happen. But when Mary asks it, she goes, okay, I got some questions. I don't know how this is going to work. Can you give me some help on this? Have you ever had questions after you've read something in the Bible or you've heard a sermon that said, you need to get out and teach the lost? And somebody might go, well, are people really even interested anymore in the gospel? That's Zechariah. But Mary would say, yeah, we do need to go teach the lost. Like, how can we start figuring out how to do this? Or somebody says, or you read a passage, that you've got to learn to conquer your anger. Well, how can you do that? I'm Irish, or I don't know what your excuse might be. Are Irish people angry? I don't know. Whatever your excuse might be, you could say that, or you could say, well, okay, yeah, I really struggle with that sin. How am I supposed, tell me how to do it. That's more of Mary. When you've got questions about something that you've heard in the sermon or something that you've read in the Bible, are you being more like Mary or more like Zechariah? It's a tall order that we're going to have Christ formed within us and represent Christ to the world. And that tall order is going to cause us to either be Mary or Zechariah. Which one are you being? Mary, in faith, asks this question and she's not muted. Think, though, finally, about the response that Mary gives to everything here. And she finds out that Elizabeth has been barren, but she's now pregnant. She's given this evidence. She's told that the Holy Spirit will overshadow her. And she says, in this marvelous acceptance of everything, in verse 38, let it be to me according to your word. Underline that. If you're into tattoos, get that tattooed on your arm or something. I don't know if a preacher should say that from the pulpit, but whatever. This phrase is so important. Let it be to me according to your word. Do you suppose that she anticipates some scandal to come when she says these words? Well, everybody knows that virgins don't give birth. And so this son is going to have sexual scandals said about him. She's going to be accused of sexual scandals. In fact, in John chapter 8, verse 41, the Pharisees say to Jesus, we were not born of sexual immorality. We have one Father, even God. Jesus, we don't even know who your Father is. And Mary, the stories, the fables that we've heard about how you came in, none of that's really true. They're implying that he came from some kind of illicit relationship. When Mary says, let it be to me according to your word, I think she's processing all of this and she says, okay, if this is the will of God, then let it be. This is also true for us. If we're going to have Christ formed within us, and we're not going to have whatever the world wants to have formed within us, we have to have the same acceptance that Mary has here. In the book of Acts, there's all kinds of suffering and persecution that the Christians go through. The first one in Acts 2:13, they're filled with new wine. In Acts 7 and 8, Stephen is stoned. In Acts 12, James is martyred. In Acts 9, there's a plot made against Paul to kill him, and he has to flee to Damascus. That's the first just few chapters of Acts. They're suffering, 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 suffering. And when we tell people, all right, your mission is to represent somebody who was crucified. Oh, and that's going to make me healthy and wealthy. No, it's not. You guys well know that when I became a Christian, my mom and dad thought I joined a cult. And they were making me watch videos that showed the alleged contradictions between the Gospels. They were showing me all these different sorts of things. I thought the day I was baptized, April 3rd, 2008, on a Thursday, I thought my mom and dad were going to be pretty happy for me. And then I came home, and they turned off the TV, which they never did. And they said, what did you do today? And I said, I was baptized. And they said, why did you do that? So that I could be forgiven? So you think that we're going to hell because we've never been baptized before. And I'm like 6 hours a Christian. And I had a choice. Let it be to me according to your word. Or let your words be the things that I listen to. What's the hurdle that you got to jump over right now? You have some relationship or some friend that if you're going to hold to the convictions of what God has said and you're really going to have him formed within you in the things that you believe, the convictions you have, and the way that you live, is there somebody that's causing you to shy away from fully being a virgin for the Lord? Be like Mary. Ask questions with the right heart and say, let it be to me according to your word. I like what one person said about this. She unreservedly embraces the purpose of God without regard to its cost to her personally. You know, later, this son that's spoken of in this text, maybe 33 and a half years later, something like that, he has a similar statement to Mary here in verse 38. When he's in the Garden of Gethsemane, and he says, Father, if you're willing, remove this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done. Jesus' mother said similar things. Jesus said this himself, and this is the one that we follow. Not my will, but yours. Whatever may come for following you, let it come because you are true. Not just because you're my favorite flavor of religion, but because this is true. And if it's true, I will submit to it no matter what. Do you have the faith of Mary? Have you ever felt like you could identify with Mary? I'm thankful that that church assigned to me a sermon on something that I had never really thought too much before about. But we're about to sing this song, Guide Me, O Thou Great Jehovah. If there's anybody here tonight that hasn't been letting Jehovah guide them, this is an opportunity to get our life right with God. If you've not been allowing Jesus to be formed within you, this is an opportunity to recalibrate and become a spiritual virgin again so that God can use you for the same reasons that he used Mary. If there's anybody here tonight that needs any assistance or encouragement, please come forward while we stand, while we sing.